This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch with Admiral Jim Stavridis. United States Navy retired, a 37-year career, and lessons learned for leadership. To risk it all, nine conflicts in the crucible of decision. We turn to lesson three, evaluate your resources. The example here is David Farragut, which is old Navy, but it's a transition. It's a Navy in the Civil War. And David Farragut is remembered now as part of the 1864 reelection campaign of Abraham Lincoln, because his victory at Mobile Bay was a major part of the campaign platform of Lincoln facing the exhausting Civil War. But I learned from Jim that David Farragut was a very careful man. He had resources that he learned from the Battle of New Orleans to conquer the Confederate forces at New Orleans, to what he's remembered for as Mobile Bay. How did David Farragut, who has a history that very much illustrates early America, how did he evaluate his resources, army, military on the land and at sea, Jim?
David Farragut, of course, is most famous for this seemingly reckless phrase, "Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead." He utters those immortal words memorized by generations of young midshipmen at the Naval Academy. He utters those words in this battle as his flagship has blown up in front of him. But he takes the risk to move forward. And it gets back to a comment we made earlier. First, he has gathered the intelligence. He knows that these torpedoes, that's what they called mines in the water in those days. He knows these torpedoes have been in the water a long time. He makes a calculation that he can probably continue on without losing many more of his ships. And then secondly, to the resource question, he is conducting a combined arms operation using both the Army ashore and his naval forces afloat, and doing so very effectively. He's merged and managed those resources, and he's done it right at the cusp of battle. It's a wonderful example of both intelligence and resources together.
He was lashed to his mast. Is that how to picture this? The Hartford is leaning port and starboard, and he's going back and forth, yelling orders down to his captain. Is that what he's doing?
You've got it. I mean, he's like the sirens calling from Ulysses' mast, and Ulysses tied to the mast to resist them. Except in this case, he's yelling the orders down to the helmsman. And again, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. I remember memorizing all of that along with this story almost 40 years ago.
He adapted as well, Jim. You emphasize that, because this is an ironclad Navy and a wooden ship Navy, a sailing Navy and a steam-fired Navy. And he's putting all these things together really for the first time for the Navy, maybe for the world. Is that correct?
Yes, this is a real pivot point for the maritime world when we're transitioning into propulsion systems that ultimately will lead to what we think of today as the steel and oil Navy, if you will. Farragut is right on the edge of all that. And again, it gets back to how well he manages resources, taking these new technologies and putting them to very effective use in a moment of crisis, as he is literally risking it all.
You list what he demonstrates: adaptation, decisiveness, the personal touch, getting last to your mast, yes, analysis, and grace. Grace as well, because he was a man who took into account of the consequences of his decision-making. One of the ironclads, I believe, was blown out of the water. Another captain, an example of evaluating resources with a very unhappy end. This is the capture of the USS Pueblo in January of 1968 by North Korean outlaws, pirates, in international water. The Lloyd Boucher, who was commanding a surveillance ship. This is a spy ship, early NSA material. He had on board, this is pre-digital, he had on board equipment that he'd been instructed to destroy if in the event he was captured. However, the way you present it, Jim, he has incomplete information, but he has to evaluate what what resources he has. Can he destroy the logs? Can he destroy the equipment? Is there help coming? He's making decisions without any guidance whatsoever from the Navy.
This is, in many ways, the saddest of the nine stories in the book, To Risk It All. It is an example of a captain who has no resources available to him at the moment of crisis. He's in essentially an unmanned surveillance spy ship, as you called it. And the U.S. Navy has neglected to provide any fighter jets overhead. There's no destroyer nearby. There's no aircraft carrier. In today's Navy, all of that would be in place before we'd send an unarmed surveillance ship close to the territorial waters of North Korea. And by the way, he was absolutely in international waters, had every right to be there. And you're correct to call the North Korean Navy and Air Force pirates who came out and captured his ship. The title of the chapter in the book is No Way Out. And that really is what Lloyd Bucher was faced with. But here's the good news. He managed to stall the North Koreans for some period of time that allowed him to destroy a great deal of the material on board. Not all of it, but he did what he could with the resources he had at the moment. He then surrendered the ship, a very controversial move. Navy captains are trained. We never give up the ship. But he, in this case, knew there was no effective means of resistance. He made the terrible decision for any captain, any Navy captain, to give up his warship. But he brought his crew home. They survived to fight another day after suffering a year of terrible torture and captivity. So not a happy ending for anybody, but I give a lot of credit to Captain Bucher for having to make such hard decisions under extreme risk.
Captain Brett Crozier, United States Navy, the Theodore Roosevelt. This is the early weeks of the pandemic. The Roosevelt is immediately challenged by what we know and mostly what we don't know about COVID-19. Brett Crozier, you illustrate, has to make decisions with there is no information anywhere in the world, whether he communicates with on high or not. And he sends a communication that leads to his dismissal, review, dismissal. Well, not dismissal. He just loses the command of Roosevelt. What do we learn about his ability to evaluate, to focus on people? Because that's lesson learned. Always consider your people. We have about a minute and a half, Jim.
Brett Crozier, captain of Roosevelt, is faced with a very tough choice. He doesn't believe the Navy is giving him the kind of support he needs in this new pandemic. He launches, if you will, a red flare, an unclassified email asking for more help for his people. That email is leaked. As a result, he is relieved of command. It's an example of someone who does the right thing, focusing on his people, but reaps a very harsh career consequence as a result. These stories will not always come out with happy endings.
The lesson I take from this, Jim, is how little information we had at the time. Yeah. I was in New York City and I was following this story. We had no understanding of the peril to the crew of Roosevelt. And we talked about other ships being challenged as well. And so the Navy is learning on the fly what to do if you have a positive case. And we had very incomplete testing. So Crozier was the front line of teaching us what to do and what not to do. And you admire him in your evaluation, always putting yourself in his mind, which is good leadership, Jim. So we're going to turn now to the part where you don't get emotionally involved when we come back. A lesson learned from all of the U.S. Navy history is to stay back, to make time slow down, Jim tells us, when you're making decisions of high risk. The book is To Risk It All. James Stavridis, United States Navy, retired as the author. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.